Hello, this is Shea Rubenstein. I just released my new album, Mahaffey, and it was heard first and only first on Jewish Community Radio.
And now, WJSU University Heights presents Jewish Community Radio, weekly half hour from 12:30 to 1 p.m. every Friday. And we also have our show Sunday morning from 7 a.m. until 8 a.m. And we are happy to be back once again with news from the community around the world. And this week's no different. This week, because of what's happening in the world news, we're going to basically change our format a little bit as we bring back to our microphone once again somebody who we had on last week, Mr. William Daroff of the United Jewish Communities, who is somebody who is very well known nationally, and he is a we're privileged to have him on. One thing I got to tell you about William, our guest, very very important, I should say, is when it comes to the Jewish community, there are various organizations which represent the Jewish world. I should say, at least in the United States, there is the two main groups are the Conference of Presidents of Major Jewish Organizations, which is what it sounds like, and what William represents is the collection of the Jewish community federations of each city, which are the voices of the Jewish communities in every city. And William's group, the United Jewish Communities, the UJC, is more or less the umbrella group of all of those federations. And William is the vice president for public policy for the UJC, which basically means that he's the guy who is the voice for the Jewish world in the United States. And so we're having William on is really the authoritative view and authoritative voice as far as how the Jewish community feels. Of course, there are different opinions, but you can't get somebody better than William as far as speaking on behalf of what's going on now. And of course, since what's happening in Gaza is the main news in the Jewish world, we welcome back William Daroff to our microphone here on WJCU. William, welcome back.
Thank you, Fred. It's great to be back. And hello, Greater Cleveland.
Yeah, William, you are a native Clevelander.
I am a native Clevelander. Yeah. I'm proud to be one. I'm an unreconstructed Cleveland Indians fan, and I'm looking forward to spring training.
I know we spoke to you last week. Normally, we don't have somebody on 2 weeks in a row, but with what's going on in the world, and this, of course, what's happening in Gaza is the news. And I got to start with a disclaimer. Although you are the authoritative voice in the Jewish community, I do have to say that disclaimer that views expressed today are not necessarily those of the station management of WJCU or the university, or anybody in the university. It's really this is going to be our opinions here. And but you do speak quite a strong part on behalf of the Jewish community.
Well, thank you. As you mentioned, Fred, the United Jewish Communities is the umbrella organization of North America's Jewish federations. There are 157 Jewish federations that are across the continent. One of our strongest, of course, is right there in Cleveland, the Jewish Community Federation of Greater Cleveland. And what these federations are is the central address of the Jewish community in each of their cities. And so as their umbrella organization, we are the central address nationally of the community organizations and internationally. All of the funds that the Federation send overseas to Israel and to elsewhere where Jews are in need flow through United Jewish Communities. We are also very active and engaged in what we do here in Washington is work on the social and domestic policy as it relates to the Jewish agencies that are supported by the Jewish Federation system, like the Jewish Family Services or the nursing homes and old age places like Montefiore and the like. And so as that umbrella body, we're very engaged in sort of every component of Jewish life in North America. And certainly as we spoke last week, the actions in Gaza have focused a lot of the attention of the Jewish community over this last week, and it's very good to be back on the phone with you over the air to discuss those issues that are important to the Jewish community and to the community at large.
And speaking of which, I know that so much mentioned about the Federation here locally. It's not just a matter of the mention, also it is the body which communicates in heavy part with various organizations around the Cleveland Jewish community, be it the Catholic Diocese or any other religious organization, or as far as get involved in social action outside the Jewish community. So the Federation really is a very, very large, encompassing organization. And to be an organization that coordinates all those nationally, that's got to be a rough job, William. I don't know how you do it.
Well, it's a lot of fun, and the best part about it is being able to actually help real people with real problems and to help move Jewish communal interests and causes forward. As you mentioned, the Jewish Community Federation of Cleveland and its Community Relations Council are very involved in talking to other groups within the mosaic that is America in Cleveland and here in Washington and in New York, elsewhere we do that on a national and international level as well, to try to help with intergroup relations and to look for allies when we need them. And we do, as a Jewish community, often need allies throughout the non-Jewish world, and that's something that we're often very able to find a lot of help with.
Yeah, and one thing that you are very active with recently was, I mean, before we get to Gaza, just as a side note for the listeners, you were involved very heavily with getting some legislation for elder care.
That's correct. We have been working, the Jewish Federation system is one of the nation's largest providers of care for older Americans, and we've been very engaged in domestic legislation dealing with the Older Americans Act and dealing with ways to make it so that folks can die, or live rather, longer and with greater dignity. And that's a part of innovative social policy work that we do here on behalf of the Jewish Federation system. And so it's a big set of agenda items, both on the domestic side and on the international side, but it's a lot of concerns that come to the Jewish community across the sphere of public policy because of who we are and because of the what we believe in and the ethics that we believe in trying to make the world a better place and trying to help every individual who can be helped.
Yes, and getting back to our topic, I know that you were... this has been quite a busy, hectic week. I know that, as I said before, I don't usually have the same guests on 2 weeks in a row, but you were very, very informative last week. And I want to just ask you a couple questions here to maybe get things on track so people know what's happening in Israel and in Gaza. But for starters, maybe you can give us a little backtrack information. What started this whole, forgive me for lack of a better word, mess in Gaza?
There are a couple answers to that. One is that this group called Hamas, which is a terrorist group that has been named as such, designated as a terrorist group by the United States, by Israel, and by the European Union, had a coup where they pushed aside the Palestinian Authority, the Fatah Party. This is the party of President Abbas, who is the president of the Palestinian Authority, out of Ramallah, which is in the West Bank. So in the other part of the Palestinian Authority, which is in Gaza, Hamas pushed the PA out, and so Hamas took over, and the international community has condemned Hamas, has been trying to push them out. The Israelis have been trying, and the U.S. and the Europeans have been trying to do what we can to move them out because they are a terrorist organization that does not accept the right of Israel to exist. Among the reasons that there's been so much pressure to push them out has been that they have been very involved in having Qassam attacks, which are launching missiles at Israel from Gaza. Hamas has done this itself, and Hamas has closed its eyes while others have done it. Other Palestinian terrorist groups have done it within Gaza, but it is clear based on the volume and the timing that Hamas is very much involved and has the ability to turn on and turn off these missile launches that have really terrorized much of southern Israel. Over just the last 12 months, over 3,000 missiles have been launched from Gaza into southern Israel. And if you've been there or seen any of the coverage, you'll see that over this time period, it has been a living nightmare with an amazing amount of trauma and impact on just everyday residents of southern Israel, particularly the city of Sirot. I've been to the school there, the elementary school there, and right out in the playground is this big concrete bomb shelter, just right there in the middle of it. It reminds me, for Clevelanders, of just any sort of playground at a school at Roxborough in Cleveland Heights, where right next to the jungle gym and the swings is a big bomb shelter. And at least twice a day for over 10 months, when the kids were out there, there would be these alerts that come about because of very sophisticated radar and video coverage that the Israelis have, so they could see as missiles were launching. And so as the kids are out playing or studying, they get this siren that goes off, and they have 15 seconds from the time they hear the alarm until they need to be in a place where they're protected. And if you just imagine living that way, it's just it's abominable. And the international community pretty much did nothing. And the Israelis and Hamas put together a ceasefire a while ago, such that there would not be neither side would take offensive action against the other. Notwithstanding that, hundreds of missiles still came over from the Gaza side into Israel. And then the ceasefire expired. Hamas said that they wouldn't renew it. And really overnight, starting about 2 weeks ago, hundreds of missiles were being launched daily over a 3 or 4 day span. And it was after that, on Friday night, Saturday morning, 2 weeks ago, that the Israelis started a massive air campaign to take out the Hamas terrorist infrastructure and to take out the launching sites where many of these missiles were coming from. And then last week we spoke on Friday, and on the next day, Saturday evening, right after Shabbat, the Jewish Sabbath, the Israelis launched a ground offensive where troops came in, and since that time, over the last 6 days, the Israelis have really been going block by block to try to dismantle the terrorist infrastructure, to try to eliminate terrorists, to try to destroy the many tunnels that flow from Egypt into Gaza, where weapons have been smuggled in. And to really change the dynamic of the situation there, such that the citizens of southern Israel are not going to be living in daily fear. There is great acceptance across the political spectrum for there to be a two-state solution. But for there to be a two-state solution, both states need to live in peace, in harmony, and not in fear. And the Palestinians need to live up to that, and to really recognize the right of the other party, of Israel, to live peacefully, and for Israeli kids to be able to not have to worry about missiles coming at them, so they can worry about, you know, what all kids are supposed to worry about, grades and calculus and girls and boys and whatnot.
Yeah.
And that really is the crux of where we are now. Last night, the UN Security Council passed unanimously, with one abstention, the abstention being the United States, a resolution in the Security Council that calls for a ceasefire. It's an issue that's been coming up a lot, and the question is, can Hamas live up to a ceasefire? Will they live up to a ceasefire? And have the Israelis done enough to dismantle the offensive capacity and the offensive work of Hamas in order to agree to a ceasefire that would put the forces of peace and freedom and Israel's right to defend itself as being paramount?
Okay, well, let me ask this question. You've given us one major update there, and I appreciate it. But why? I guess this is a loaded question. Not sure if you can answer this one, but I like putting you on the spot. Why was there never a call for a ceasefire when the rockets were hailing from Gaza into Sderot?
It is it's an excellent question. There are a couple answers. The obvious one is that the world community wasn't interested. They were not interested in having a few of these missiles being launched, invading Israel's territorial territory, as well as, and actually in an area that's not disputed at all. Unlike, say, the West Bank, or areas in the east of Jerusalem where there is a dispute, about who is in control of that land, there is no dispute, about who's in control of the area that Hamas was launching missiles at. So the international community was quiet. Occasionally they would nod in that direction, but it was seen more as a, sort of a nuisance, than as being a, the real problem and devastation that it caused. Secondly, Hamas did agree to a ceasefire and an agreement that they wouldn't be offensive. And with that, Hamas dialed down the amount of Katyushas, the amount of rockets that were coming in, by 70 or 80%. So to some extent, they said they had a ceasefire, but sometimes they couldn't control what people were doing, or they were responding to specific Israeli acts when they launched missiles. But that hypocritical view by the international community and by the news media is something that I know gives a lot of your listeners and my friends and our associates who support Israel in this self-defensive counterterrorism action a lot of heartburn because, as once again, Israel is being treated with a double standard, now, and Jews are being treated with a double standard.
There were a few rallies in this country this past week. You or I won one in D.C. and I was one in New York. The rally for in support of Israel. Tell me about the rally that you had in Israel. I mean, in D.C. I'm sorry.
Let me first say that United Jewish Communities has an initiative called Rallies Across North America, which is a week of solidarity with Israel, where there are literally dozens, I think we're up to almost 70 rallies that are taking place this week in solidarity with Israel and in solidarity with Israel's right to defend herself. You were at one in New York, and here in Washington I was at one, and for folks, and I'll tell you about it in a second, but for folks who are listening in Cleveland, there is a rally that will be taking place in Cleveland at noon on Monday, January 12th, at Public Square. And I'm sure we can talk about it a little bit later.
Yes.
But I'd encourage everybody to go to that noon Monday on Public Square in Cleveland, January 12th. The idea behind these rallies is to show the great deal of support that there is for the Jewish community and more importantly, for Israel and for her right to defend herself when she's being attacked. Here in Washington, we had over 1,000 people who were at a downtown historic 6th and I synagogue. The ambassador spoke, Ambassador Sly Meridor. We also had Senator Ben Cardin from Maryland and Congressman Robert Wexler from Palm Beach and Congressman Mark Kirk from Chicago and Congressman Elliot Engel from New York speaking. There was also a bishop, an African-American bishop, who spoke in support of Israel's right to defend herself. And it was a real a great time to feel the solidarity in the air with Jews and non-Jews alike rallying along with really hundreds of thousands of others across North America to tell America, to tell the television cameras that Israel will not be a victim to this sort of terror without responding, and that she will respond until peace comes about. How was New York?
New York was amazing. The police were expecting about 300 people, 400 people, and they had to move the barricades out into the streets, and I'll take over one more block past that because there were, ended up being about 1,500 people in support of Israel. And the two most interesting signs that I saw, actually groups of signs, was the Christian support for Israel and the Hindu support for Israel. And I was very impressed to see both groups. I mean, I expect to see the Jews, of course, supporting Israel, but I thought it was very, very nice and to see other groups saying, "Listen, Israel, we're standing with you as well."
Yeah, absolutely. Additionally, so the rally is going to be in Cleveland on Monday. There's also, and I know a lot of people listen to you on the web, Fred.
Yes.
There was a huge rally in New York, sponsored by the Federation of New York and the JCRC of New York. That will be on Sunday, January 11th. At 11 a.m. So this Sunday at 11 a.m. at 42nd Street and 2nd Avenue, right near the Israeli consulate, right where near the UN, and that will be a massive, many tens of thousands of folks there from the New York metropolitan area, from the tri-state, who will be there also to show their support for Israel. And in true New York fashion, they scheduled it at 11 a.m. Sunday so folks could get back in time to watch the Giants in the playoffs.
Haha, it's funny. but I know that in the New York rally, there were many many great speakers, many famous names, and I was very impressed with the crowd because it's it was who was showing up. It was very nice. There were kids from various schools taking time off from their school in the middle of the school day, where principals were bringing their classes down from Jewish schools. And I was also surprised. There's also kids who go to public schools. And I asked, one of them said, "Well, we're on vacation this week, but we would have came anyhow." And I was very pleased to see that. Very strong sign of solidarity. People show signs. And there are also various other communities holding rallies as well.
Yeah, actually, there's a list. If you go to our website, which is ujc.org, and you click on Gaza situation, you'll see a logo for rallies across North America. And there's a list there, again, as I said, of almost 70 rallies that will be taking place across North America this week. And hopefully folks can find them in their community. I know you also have a lot of listeners down in South Florida, and there are on Sunday, rallies taking place throughout South Florida, in Miami, in Broward County, and in Palm Beach County, where my in-laws will be attending the rally. So the folks should look on the web and definitely get out there, because it's important. If you've been watching TV at all, even Fox and MSNBC, but particularly CNN and the BBC, all that you see, and particularly the last week before we started this, are folks who are yelling and screaming about Israel, against Israel. And there actually are protesters who are here in Washington who are out in front of the Israeli embassy right now, who are out in front of the hotel in downtown Washington where President-elect Obama is staying, who are demanding that the U.S. take a firmer role in a ceasefire, which really means in pushing for Israel's capitulation in this, and Israel putting down her guard and not being able to defend herself as 320 other nations of the world are able to defend themselves. We talked about it last week, and I'll say it again, that the idea here is that if missiles were coming across from Ontario, across Lake Erie, into downtown Cleveland, it would take about 10 seconds for the United States to respond and to stop that from occurring, and the American people, by 90% to 10%, would have, Dennis Kucinich maybe accepted, would have no problem with the U.S. defending itself, and the world community would have no problem with that, and the Canadian government would do what it could to stop it, and that's exactly the situation that we have where Hamas is doing this. There's no governmental body that is stopping them from launching these attacks, and Israel has had enough. Israel is not going to just lay down and allow itself to live in a state of perpetual fear if it can stop it. And there have been amazing, amazing attempts by the Israelis to make sure that this is not a humanitarian tragedy. The World Food Organization actually stopped taking in more food because their storage was at capacity and had a two-week capacity. There was a lull in fighting for 4 hours on Wednesday to allow for more humanitarian relief. This is really a situation where on the one hand, Israel is trying very deliberately to target terrorists and not to have a humanitarian tragedy. And on the other hand, Israel is providing tons and tons of food. Israel is providing fuel for electricity and power for Gaza. Israel is doing what it can with the international organizations. And it's not an easy place, and it's not always evident when you look at somebody, whether they're a civilian, whether they're a terrorist, whether they work for a non-governmental organization, or whether they might be all three at the same time. It's really a cesspool of terror, and unfortunately, Hamas uses civilians to hide behind. They launched missiles from schools. They launched missiles from hospitals. They purposely are within the civilian population so that they can hide behind them in a cowardly way. And I'll say that again, that in a cowardly way, these terrorists really are putting their entire population at risk. And that is the problem. The problem is here that there are, I am certain, millions of Palestinians who would like to live in freedom and democracy, who are just interested in waking up in the morning and making a buck and being able to feed their kids and put their kids through school. And Hamas is just standing in the way of that, and hopefully what this will lead to is Hamas's reduction in their status within Israeli society, so that we can really move towards a meaningful peace process where there will not be terrorism inflicted upon innocents.
Amen. And also, just a reminder, we're speaking with Mr. William Daroff, the Vice President for Public Policy at United Jewish Communities, which is the umbrella group between all the Jewish community federations nationally. He's also the director of the Washington, D.C. office of the UJC. And also because we are, so William, we should say William is really the one of the key voices in this country regarding what's happening. And we appreciate him coming on for what's happening here on Jewish Community Radio. But William, this is really a tough situation going on here, and while there have been moments of ceasefire, there was a story, and I don't know if you can comment on this or not, there was a story that a UN vehicle was fired upon by Israel, which later came out to be discovered that it was actually Hamas that fired on this vehicle, but that correction didn't quite make the news.
It is, the news coverage of this has been incredibly problematic. I will say that the Israelis and the Jewish community, but particularly the Israelis, have really increased their Hasbara or public relations efforts by 1,000% since the Second Lebanon War 2.5 years ago. There are all sorts of briefings that are coming out. There's all sorts of video coverage where, when someone claimed, for instance, the school that was launching missiles at Israel and RPGs at Israeli tanks, when everybody said, oh no, that's just a school, the Israelis were able to show video of missiles actually coming from windows of that school and to show terrorists were hiding out there.
You mean from inside the building?
Yeah, from the roof of the building.
Wow.
Yeah.
I missed that video. I was out of town this whole week, so I missed a lot of the news.
Well, I wish I could tell you that you missed some good news. I think the good news is, and I will say that the good news is today, as distinct from a week ago when we spoke, is that there are more terrorists who are no longer with us on this planet. And that when folks are evil and commit evil and purposely target civilians and children and are just not interested in the peace process and are not interested in Western values or in the West at all, and they try to take aim at and take human lives, they're putting themselves at risk and obviously their families. And while the humanitarian, none of us wants to see death, none of us wants to see war.
True.
But if folks are going to live by the sword, then they need to be able to die by the sword. And we're in a better place from that point of view because there are 500 or 600 less terrorists in this world. The media issue is one that I think that to a great extent we need to just take a deep breath and not watch CNN or BBC or read the New York Times. And Israel needs to do what Israel needs to do and not allow itself to be boxed in because of world opinion or because of the news media. Because when it counts, there's really only one country that that knows what's in Israel's best interest, and that's Israel. And Israel needs to do what she needs to do so that she can live in peace and freedom and be like every other member of the world community, not at risk of being attacked at every moment of the day.
Well, too, we had another minute or so here left before the show's over. Let me ask you this quickie question here. There have been some attacks from Lebanon. Is that something that we fear that may involve opening up a second front? And if so, is that going to be the, so to speak, trigger that gets Iran involved?
That is an excellent question, Fred, and one that's tough to do in 60 seconds. All indications are right now that the missiles that were launched from Lebanon were not launched officially by Hezbollah, but rather were launched by some Palestinian terrorists who are there just trying to stir things up. The Lebanese government has condemned it. Hezbollah has not taken responsibility, which they normally would have done. At this point, all indications are that it was just rogue elements and it's not the starting of a second front. The Iranian piece you bring up is incredibly important. Iran is here really pulling Hamas and Hezbollah to some extent and Syria to some extent along as marionettes. This is an effort by Iran to distract the world community away from its nuclear ambition to get through the Bush administration without having its nuclear by the U.S. or by Israel. And I think that's exactly why Iran pushed the button here for Hamas not to continue the ceasefire and for Hamas to launch the missiles that they've launched. I think that is the story here. And at the end of the day, God willing, Ahmadinejad will not have what he was looking for, which is a strategic victory as this develops. The Arab world and the Persian world have never really understood the value of Palestinian life, and I think that the way that they are not only just allowing them to languish in refugee camps across the Middle East, but also just be put themselves up as fodder for their own terrorist efforts, I think is just in and of itself evil. I know we're out of time. Let me just tell folks again that it's noon at Public Square on Monday. Please go to the Cleveland Federation website for more information.
JewishCleveland.org.
You got it. JewishCleveland.org. Thank you, Fred.
And thank you.
Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom. I appreciate you coming on here and giving us more insights. Of course, we've been speaking with William Daroff, the Vice President for Public Policy at the United Jewish Communities, the umbrella for the federations nationally. And William, of course, is a whiz and a policy whiz. And we appreciate your coming on, William, and I wish you Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you. Shabbat Shalom to everybody in Cleveland.
Thank you. And as we finish the show today, we want to, I was going to thank William and also say the official disclaimers we said at the beginning of the show that because we're dealing with politics, the opinions expressed on this show was those of the guests and not necessarily those of the station management or the university or its management. And we do want to thank everybody for joining us here on Jewish Community Radio. We hope you'll join us back here next week, 12:30 to 1. I'm not sure who the guest is going to be, but I doubt it'll be anybody as powerful as William. And we thank William for coming on once again. And we go now back to Heist programming here at WJCU and look forward to being back here Sunday morning at 7 a.m. Shabbat Shalom.